Good evening and welcome once again to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM San Francisco Bay Area. I'm your host, Jeff Hayden. Joining me in the studio tonight is NBC legal and political analyst Dean Johnson. Dean, welcome.
Hey, thanks, Jeff, and it's good to be back.
Donald Trump said that he would be a dictator from day one. We are now at day nine, and President Trump has lived up to his promises. He has pardoned some 1,500 insurrectionists who stormed the Capitol on January 6th and injured 174 police officers. He began mass deportation of immigrants, attempted to end birthright citizenship, instituted a federal hiring freeze, and actually just yesterday sent out letters to some 2 million civilian employees of the federal government suggesting it's time to retire. He fired the U.S. inspector generals who are tasked with routing out fraud, waste, and corruption in government and oversaw many of the agencies of the federal government. He threatened to shut down the Federal Emergency Management Agency. He has spoken remotely to a national anti-abortion rally. Well, the list goes on and on. But the political impact of America's shift to the right is historical. But perhaps even more significant is its personal impact on each of us and as individuals, the price we pay in anxiety, depression, and uncertainty. Tonight's show is the first in a series of shows which we hope will become a roadmap for navigating the strange new world of Trump's America. Over the coming weeks and months, we plan to host conversations with some of America's top political scientists, economists, legal scholars, elected officials, and community activists about life in a Trump presidential world. Tonight, we want to kick off this series by talking about the issue that is literally closest to our hearts. How does living in MAGA America affect us as individuals? What is the emotional, psychological, and intellectual impact of America's red shift? So tonight's show, American Narcissist, Coping with Life Under the Trump Regime. Dean?
Thanks, Jeff. And as I said, it's great to be back. And good evening, everyone. Tonight's show is one of great personal importance to me, and I suspect to many of the people in our audience. The anxiety that people are feeling over America's future is palpable. I've mentioned in the past my sister, who is a dyed-in-the-wool Trump supporter. I have a very dear friend who has Fox News on in the background 24/7. Probably just about every one of us knows someone, a loved one, a colleague, or a friend who has gone down the rabbit hole along with millions of other Americans. And since the election, you and I and our colleagues have had countless conversations with mental health professionals, women's rights activists, members of the LGBT community and the transgender community, recent immigrants and their families and friends, all of whom are worried sick about the future and what it may hold. So tonight, we want to open our series on navigating Trump world by giving our listeners a chance to vent and to talk about how the change is affecting them personally, and to get some feedback from some professionals who have been there and done that, who understand the politics and the psychology, and who have dealt with the type of trauma that we're all facing now. And you know, Jeff, this show is going to count as a success only if you and I don't talk too much.
Hope springs eternal.
Yes. We want you to call in, listeners. We want to let you know how you, let us know. Let us know how you're doing and what's going on with you. Now, we know some of the information may be sensitive. It may be very personable. But you don't have to give your name. You can use a first name or you can use a fake name or no name at all. This is the chance that you have to vent and to get some feedback. Don't let Trump world silence you already. Jeffrey?
As always, we're eager to hear what's on your mind and to answer your questions. You may call regarding any question on tonight's topic. You're not limited to the exact point we may be in our conversation. And please remember the opinions expressed on this show are the opinions of the host and the guests alone. They don't necessarily reflect the opinions of this station, of NPR, of any of the employees or our underwriters. And while we can discuss general principles of law and or psychology, neither our guest nor host can provide individual legal advice or therapy over the air. If you're in need of specific legal advice or therapy, we can help you find a qualified professional in your area. But for tonight, give us a call at 415-841-4134. Again, we are at 415-841-4134. If you're outside of the San Francisco Bay Area, call us toll-free at 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. Dean.
You know, Jeff, our guests tonight are uniquely qualified to help us understand the dynamics of our collective relationship with one Donald J. Trump. Our first guest is Lisa Herndon. Lisa is a licensed clinical social worker and master of education. She has a private psychotherapy practice in Santa Cruz and previously practiced in Palo Alto. She works with couples, families, and individuals. She was the clinical supervisor for Women's SV, which helps women in Silicon Valley who are in abusive relationships. And she writes opinion pieces for the local newspaper Lookout in Santa Cruz, using her knowledge of psychology and applying it to the current political situation. And Jeff, who is our other guest?
Our other guest is Serena Fennell. Serena is a massage therapist and a practicing minister, an author of a book called A Journey of Wholeness that outlines the process of coming out of traumatic experiences. While this work is due out in the spring, and we look forward to its release, we have Serena with us tonight. And without further ado, Lisa, Serena, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Now, normally we like to begin with one of our big questions, but I would like to begin with a phone call and turn it over to Peter from Larkspur. Peter, you're on the air. Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Well, hi. Thanks for having me. As Dean and I were talking today, having covered the White House and having been a network producer for many years, one of the things that Dean and I were talking about is Trump media is really like a tsunami of stories, countless stories every day. So many so that the media covering him really can't do justice to any one. As soon as one release and you start to look into it, another release comes and it moves the story, it moves your old story away and you're now focusing on a new story. But what Trump does so very well is that he plays on the two basic emotions that motivate audiences, and any of us who've done TV for years know this. The two base emotions are fear and anger, and each hits a raw nerve in the audience. Trump plays on those two emotions. And then the other thought that I might start with is that, you know, he really sees this presidency as a TV program. Witness the quote that was reported in this morning's Times, the quote that was attributed to the White House that said to all of his department heads, every day they should think of a TV headline that's going to exceed whatever was covered the day before. So you're creating a tsunami of stories, hitting at the core of things we care most about that make us both angry or fearful. And he's manipulating that. The White House is manipulating that. He's not the first president to be this media savvy. I covered President Reagan, and he was also very, very accomplished, thanks to Michael Deaver, in managing the press. But the difference was they picked one story a day, and they focused on that. The contrast to President Trump is that he picks many stories a day, and we spend our time chasing. It's like launching off fireworks, and the media then runs around like with baskets trying to catch the embers as they fall to the earth. That's what covering the White House is today.
You know, I should say Peter was many years ago, I hate to think how long ago, Peter was my mentor when I first started in TV. He's one of our great TV producers, and he's covered news at all levels. But turning to our guest, Peter strikes some, I think, very important themes here. First, the degree to which the current situation sucks our energy. It sucks all the air out of the room. And the degree to which somebody like Trump, would play on emotions like fear and anger and use them for his own purposes. This is kind of characteristic of what you have referred to as the abusive relationship, no?
Yes, that's what I wrote about, is how similar it is to see Donald Trump as a spousal abuser, creating a lot of fear and confusion. And then the rest
Sorry.
Of
it. Could you say that again?
And then Donald Trump is like a bad partner. Like we're all in a bad marriage. He creates a lot of fear, a lot of confusion, and he's also very seductive. And in domestic violence, it takes a really long time to get out of the marriage.
It's funny you say that. We had a big question set up, and I was going to hit that very issue. Peter, feel free to stay with us. We would love your input as we're going. But the big question is really two parts. The first part was, why do millions of Americans support a man who, throughout his entire career, thought of them as losers and suckers and said so publicly? But ultimately, the second part, which you're hitting on right now, isn't this a whole national relationship of domestic violence? Our new president left us as a battered partner. Mm-hmm. We ran off. Mm-hmm. We left him.
And there was violence when we ran off. That's common.
And then we took him back. We have second thoughts about it. We think, well, we feel better when we have this strong protector, provider. He's not good for us. He doesn't take care of us, but we run back because it's what we know. He makes us feel safe, even though we're being battered.
And fantasy, I think, plays a big role in it. He'll be different this time. He's there for us.
Something I want to acknowledge is that he is a energy suck. We will continue to put our energy, we will continue to talk about him, and he will thrive on it. If we allow ourselves to realize there's some topics here that we really need to address, each individual person has their community at heart. Pay attention to your community, ignore the screaming mess in the corner that is burning down the house, and take care of what's in the house.
And he's constantly waving his right hand while he's doing other things with his left. He's got you looking at the right. Pay no attention to what my left hand is doing.
Yeah. So pay attention to what you know is valuable to you. Address that.
I'll bring prices down. It's okay.
So, question for Peter and our guests. Our media, radio, TV, print media, are we feeding that? I had an experience the other day where I was flipping through the channels very rapidly. And you know how normally when you flip through the channels, you just get a little bit of sound from each channel. It's like bum, 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 bum. Mm-hmm. I was flipping through the channels and I got Trump, 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 Trump. You don't hear anything about anybody but Trump. I mean, is that feeding this abusive relationship?
Yes.
How so?
It's that narcissist. When they leave the room, we're still talking about him. He is taking our energy. That system is taking our energy, and we're not applying it to where we can actually make change. And we're needing to step away from, at this point, looking at the government for supporting us, because the government's right now, for the next 4 years, dissolving. And we have to find ways that people can actually rise up and do good. Like, so do good work, create good businesses.
How do we as individuals, and Peter, if you're still with us, how do we as members of the media deal with that? I know there's, in the area of narcissistic analysis, there's a thing called the Grey Rock strategy, but I don't see media not talking about Donald Trump. How do we not keep our attention focused on Donald Trump all the time?
If media took their attention that they were putting on Trump and put it on organizations that were addressing what Trump is attacking, all of a sudden those organizations would get more funding. Those organizations would have more visibility to actually do their work. And Trump would go crazy with us not talking about him.
But how do you not look at him? I mean, he's giving us Greenland.
Yeah, stop doing that. Stop talking about that. Stop. I mean, it is so tempting and it's so entertaining, but he's our president. He's not our entertainer. We need to stop treating him like an entertainer.
So we're.
I would suggest that it's deeper than that. Okay. I would suggest, Dean, that you are correct. You are three quarters correct in your assessment of this, that he has TV and print and radio. But Trump is a communications company, and he is the epitome of a company who realizes he does not need the gatekeepers. He can own and control the media directly. There are four platforms in contemporary media: print, video, audio, and social media. The first three are controlled by gatekeepers, by editors. The fourth, social media, is the wild, wild west, and it's where he excels. So he can control the dialogue, and you also have to realize, and this is probably a longer conversation, I'd love to know what your guests think. Once upon a time, and I will date myself, like going back to the Cronkite news, what got on television news was determined as what was most important. The criteria, a series of criteria, but important was the word. Now, the evening newscasts, even the local news, they're more interested in what is interesting, not important, but interesting. What is trending? The nightly news lineups are determined by what's trending in the afternoon. And if you want to get down to that, so much of social media is really nothing more than gossip. Did you hear? What did you hear? What do you know? Oh, I heard.
Yeah.
And aren't we kind of in a state of overwhelm? Because back in the day, back when there was Ronald Reagan or even Eisenhower, you know, we had the nightly news. Now we have a 24/7 news cycle. We have this constant inundation of social media. Are we overwhelmed?
Sure. That, and
the
I think we're isolated.
Yeah.
Well, I'll just say the media is balkanized. Back in like 1975, Cronkite, Huntley Brinkley, and Frank Reynolds had about 66 million people watch every night in a country of 250 million. That was appointment television, and all three shows were largely the same. Tonight, the evening newscast will be lucky if all three, even including Fox, as 9-10, exceed 20 million and an audience in a world audience, a U.S. audience of 340 million. People no longer see the same thing. It's no longer important to get on the evening news. You can get on Joe Rogan and have twice the audience. David Muir will be lucky to win with 9 million today. Joe Rogan had 42 million streams with his interview.
Okay, so
the audience has gone haywire.
Lisa and Serena, you know, we've used the term bad marriage. America is not in a bad marriage. Some of us are in a bad marriage. And I think, you know, given that our analogy to the cycle of violence, aren't some of us still in the honeymoon phase? And if so, how do they break out of that, and how do we help them break out of that?
Yeah, I think there's people who really like him and are really hopeful right now that a strong leader is going to come and going to clean everything up, and they feel really good right now. But it's not grounded in reality, and that's usually what happens in these marriages. People are, you know, a seductive partner promising the world, and then reality hits.
Yeah, the fantasy is what the narcissist typically sells, right?
Yep. Oh, yeah.
Right? And I
hate to jump in, but can you just tell us in lay terms what you mean, what a narcissist is, and what narcissistic personality disorder is, so our listeners will be up to speed?
Well, I can't diagnose him since I haven't met him in person, but the lack of empathy is usually what we therapists look for as the key, the inability to see the other people as real, as having feelings. So they almost see people as not completely real. They're very self-absorbed, and so they're the only person that matters.
And there's a certain set of tactics or tools that particular kind of personality uses, like seduction and gaslighting and so on.
Intimidation.
Yeah. And just to be clear, we're not saying that we're diagnosing Trump as a narcissist. We're saying that maybe this, you know, the lens of abusive relationship is a good way to look at the relationship between Trump and the people.
Yeah, I think it's good to have some ways of looking at it.
Yeah. And
could I ask Lisa a question?
Sure.
Sure.
Would you, as I was listening to you and appreciating what you were saying, let's take it a step back. In the years that, say, we were in a Biden administration, mm-hmm. which had its series of pitfalls, and not everything was certainly rosy all the time, that was a tough marriage. Would it be totally out of line to say that Trump was the sexy mistress offering us better?
Yes, Peter, that would be totally out of line. No, actually, everyone here is smiling at how apt that analogy might be.
Yeah. Well, I just wondered, because I mean, Lisa is nailing it. I just was wondering, is Trump the sexy mistress?
In the way that, a fantasy. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're not grounded in reality, then you think that a president can come and be strong and solve all your problems, even your personal problems.
And he creates a whole reality. Mm-hmm. I mean, the whole idea behind MAGA is that there was a time when real Americans ran America, and mm-hmm. they were entitled to do so. And at some point, America was taken away from them by an unnamed them. Mm-hmm. And now we have to take it back. And mm-hmm. as Yogi Berra used to say, nostalgia ain't quite what it used to be, because that America never existed. But Trump can create that reality, the belief, create the myth, if you will, that is.
That's why I like Peter's. Peter's metaphor here.
Yeah.
And if you take it to the next step, Trump has systematically destroyed, I'm going to use the word castigated, any opposition. And he's done that by saying, if you oppose me, I will take out your money and you will not succeed, even if you're a Republican. And if you're a Democrat, don't even bother to stop by.
So with that one, getting back down to the grassroots, getting very local, getting into your communities, makes a big difference. When we're looking at the big politics, most individuals can't do anything about the big issues, but we can do things locally that are going to affect the big issues in our local communities. So coming back to our individual, our personal bodies, our personal family units.
Yeah, and I know we normally, when we use the word narcissist in a sentence, normally we think about the person who just is in love with his image and loves to look in the mirror. But that kind of person is very dangerous, aren't they?
If they're a malevolent narcissist, there's also benevolent narcissists who are, they're not really mean, they're just self-absorbed. Mm-hmm. But he's got a lot of aggressive, antisocial aspects to his personality.
And is there a point where such a person inevitably becomes dangerous in the relationship? And if so, how does that happen?
Yeah. I mean, when you don't care about the other person in the relationship, it becomes very dangerous. That means you don't understand the consequences of your action. You know, you can tell all the federal employees mean things and not care about the harm and the people who won't get their food and stuff like that.
So what I'm getting at is there are probably 70, 80 million people who are very much enamored with Donald Trump at this point. They voted for him to be president 3 times. Is there a point when that relationship starts to break up, and how do you see it unfolding?
Well, unfortunately, in domestic violence, there's 2 ways it goes. If it's a very toxic, destructive marriage and you stay in it, you usually suffer chronic illnesses. Slow death is one way to go. And the other way to go is get out. And that it takes a lot of resources and a lot of strength, but obviously that's the healthier way to go than to stay in a toxic relationship.
And what, you know, right now, it seems to me that Trump supporters live in an almost unfalsifiable delusion. I mean, you can, if you say anything bad about Trump, it's fake news or it's propaganda. If you say anything good about Trump, well, even you are admitting that he's a good guy. How are they eventually going to break out of that delusional framework, or are they ever?
Well, again, in domestic violence, it's usually when things hit close to home. When the
if
somebody's in a violent type of relationship or emotionally abusive type of relationship, they might take it on in order to keep the marriage together, keep the family together. But once they see their kids getting hit or their kids getting manipulated, that's when they often take a stand.
Or you can't take the kids to school, or your best friend who's a recent immigrant is being taken off to Guantanamo Bay.
Yeah.
That might be the thing that triggers.
Yeah, then people start questioning.
There's also a media situation here, is the wrong word, but in my experience, having covered many, many administrations and been in this business for more than 40 years, oftentimes I've had the feeling that when a new administration comes into office, for the most part, people say, I voted, it's history, whatever they do in Washington, just let them do it and keep, I'm not going to pay that much attention. What they do doesn't directly or doesn't always affect me. And so now when you have new decisions that might affect Medicaid or what have you, it becomes very personal. Mm-hmm. It's going to be harder to ignore. You use the word grassroots. I remember years ago they spent literally 20 seconds to raise the national debt limit and 3 days to discuss how much milk prices would be for school kids' lunches. We get down, when you get down to the minutia where it really hits people, then there will be stories, and that might start to change things, because all news basically is local.
Yeah.
But this whole program, in a sense, we're talking about what's going on inside the Beltway. And a lot of America wouldn't even know what the Beltway was.
Mm. Yeah.
You're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW, 91.7 FM, San Francisco Bay Area. I'm Jeff Hayden, joined in the studio by Emmy-nominated legal and political analyst Dean Johnson. Tonight, we're talking about America's narcissistic relationship with the Donald Trump regime. If you have questions for my guests, our phone number is 415-841-4134. Again, that's 415-841-4134. If you're outside of the San Francisco Bay Area, call us toll-free at 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. And as always, you can call regarding any question on topic. This is really a chance for you to call us and vent, even if you don't come in at the exact point we may be in our conversation. Maybe you disagree with us. Maybe you yourself are a Republican or even a MAGA Republican. We'd still like to hear from you. We're not the only voices. We'd like to hear what you have to say. Share it with us. So, Dean, what do you think about this? I mean, you've kind of started to paint a picture that we've elected a president incubus. Is that really the case? What's going on here?
Well, let me tell you something. I've been sitting here for a half hour talking about Donald Trump, and I'm tired of Donald Trump sucking my energy and my airtime. And what I'd like to do is I'd like to divide the country up, since it already is sort of divided up into blue folks and red folks, and I'd like to bring it down to the individual level. For us blue folks that haven't gone down the rabbit hole, how do we deal with those red folks who are still, you know, in Trump world and who still, you know, see things through the lens of Trump? I know, Lisa, you talked to your ex-brother-in-law and got a very Trumpian response. How do we talk to those people without infuriating them, mm-hmm. without just getting into an argument, without going, yes, it is, no, it isn't?
Mm-hmm. First thing.
How do we make progress?
Take a deep breath before you say anything.
Okay.
And while we're taking that deep breath, we have to break for just a moment. You're listening to Your Legal Rights. We'll be back right after this.
Support for KALW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you live in San Francisco or Marin County, the Bar Association's lawyer referral service can arrange for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. Call 415-989-1616 or visit sfbar.org for more information.
So how do we deal with those folks when they're here? Those that are diehards in the middle of living here, just as how would they deal with us if we were to suddenly be living in somewhere in the red world?
Definitely, I think talk to them. I mean, I went all around Santa Cruz trying to get people to tell me why they were drawn to Donald Trump so I could write an article for the local newspaper. And it wasn't easy to get people to talk because they would say vague things like, I like his personality, he's going to get rid of the immigrants. So then I called my brother-in-law because he loves talking politics and we've stayed friends. He lives on the East Coast. And I was surprised at how he was still really in the fantasy. You know, he told me immediately when I called him that Trump was going to stand up to the oligarchy and that he's the only one who can do it because he's so wealthy. And that sounds like a fantasy to me.
Yeah, no, I think it's a perfect example of what I was talking about because we see the oligarchs, the centibillionaires going down to kiss the ring at Mar-a-Lago. We see it as consolidating the oligarchy. He mm-hmm. sees it as Trump standing up to the oligarchy.
Yeah, and it's the twist, being able to twist things. He and I both worked on Capitol Hill when we were young. We are about the same age. From the East Coast, political science degrees, that's what you do. You go and you work for a congressperson. January 6th really shook me up, and I thought it would have shaken him up, too. And he said that the Democrats provoked it and made it worse as a political, a way to manipulate the political situation,
right.
Which just shocked me.
I talked to one of my relatives out in the red states, North Carolina, and this particular person told me, A, they were only tourists and there was really no violence, but the violence was instigated by the Democrats and could hold both views at the same time. And it's kind of hard to deal with those folks, isn't it?
One thing I've noticed is going full Midwestern is really helpful
that's
talking about the weather and starting there, starting with rapport, building connection, and then tiptoeing into those places that are the hot topics and realizing that we have certain values and we orient to different values than people in MAGA. MAGA wants more of a strong leader, and more blue people want a wider range of people of leadership of their own.
Yeah, I think we're starting to figure out strategies. I mean, I always say there are things that just transcend politics. Mm-hmm. And when I talk to my family back in North Carolina, my sister, who is hardcore MAGA. I mean, she even skipped the Trump rally in her hometown because they wouldn't let her bring her gun. I've found that there's certain things you can do to get the conversation started. One of the great ones is, so how's your dog?
Mm-hmm.
And then
mm-hmm.
and how's that pickup truck running?
Yeah.
And then you can roll into it. You know?
Yeah. Well, I told my brother-in-law that I was on the Affordable Care Act. And he said, really? You and the kids? And I said, yeah. And he said, I don't know anybody who's on the Affordable Care Act. And then we started talking about the government institutions that help us. And he said, well, I had to go back to upgrade my work skills, and community college was really useful. And so we started getting common ground around that.
Yeah. Yeah, that building rapport is that first step of having connections. So we're not a divided country. We actually have more in common, but we focus on all the ways that we're different. And that sensationalizes. That makes great news. It draws our attention.
No politician ever lost his or her job by making you fear their opponents.
Exactly.
Both sides have been playing on fear. Mm-hmm. The Democrats have been telling us that a Trump presidency will cost both our democracy and, as an intermediate step, women will lose virtually all their rights. Yeah. First, their bodily autonomy and maybe eventually even their right to vote. And the Republicans, on the other hand, they think that the Democrats want to basically hand over everything to people who aren't here yet. Mm-hmm. None
of those
are true.
Both of those, aren't you angry about that? Of course you're angry about that. Shouldn't you be angry about that? Yeah, I sure am angry about that.
Yeah.
Well, let's shift a little bit. Going back to my red and blue analogy, we're talking about dealing with the red folks, the Trump supporters, the
wearers of
the MAGA
hats. Can I jump in for a moment?
And, yeah.
We do have a caller I wanted to put through.
Okay.
Although we may have lost her, she just disappeared off the line. Lisa from San Francisco, if you can still hear us, feel free to call us back. We're ready to jump and take your call. But Dean, let me turn to you.
Yeah, so just talking about ourselves for a while, as blue folks, as folks who are outside of the MAGA orbit, how do we keep our sanity?
Again, I took that nice deep breath.
Oh, yeah. Those work really well.
And doing the basics of making sure you get enough exercise, make sure you get enough sleep, actually eat some meals that are nutritious, that aren't fast food. Those simple self-care things actually pay off huge when we're addressing stressful, traumatic experiences.
And I'd say get involved in the community.
Yes.
You know, I heard, I don't know if Michelle Obama really said this, but instead of when they go low, we go high, she said, when they go low, we go local.
Absolutely.
I like that.
But there is one other thing to factor in. We're not going to suddenly organize and win again. Mm-hmm. It's not going to be easy to take back the House, much less the presidency. And the reality we have to face and deal with is we're going to have to change minds. We're going to have to work harder than we take it for granted, because enough people have left the three main blue states in the last 5 years. That's California, Illinois, and New York. Hmm. We've had enough young people leave for job opportunities in places where the standard of living is better, where you can live better for the money you earn. Even if you earn a little less, your housing costs are a lot less. We've had enough people leave that at the next census, unless things turn around, between those three blue states alone, we will lose 12 congressional seats. That's with what we've lost so far. And they're going to Texas and to Florida. That's the reality of the Electoral College map. That's the reality of the House of Representatives. So we have to work a little differently. We have to work a little smarter.
We have to make it a little more inclusive. And something else, we need to make it fun. People are not drawn to politics because they don't see how they can engage with it. And if you can find ways that people can engage with ease and also don't burn out, you're going to get more people engaged. And we need big numbers to do that.
Yeah, and humor.
Let me jump in. Lisa's back with us. I've been trying to get you on the line. Lisa, you're on the air. Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Are you speaking to me?
I believe I am.
We are.
Okay,
Not anymore. I think we lost Lisa.
Yeah.
We lost both calls. Maybe our phones aren't being friendly tonight.
Uh-oh.
We'll try to be inclusive if you do call us.
Our number is
415-841-4134. And it looks like Peter is back joining us.
Yeah, I hate to be a conspiracy theorist, but I don't know, one more broken phone call.
But he's got our lines.
Yeah. Is Peter with us, or did we lose Peter?
I am with you.
Peter's back. We lost Peter momentarily. Yeah.
Okay, so that's three lost phone calls, Peter. Are we on the edge of a conspiracy here? We have lost
Completing Peter. Three, we lost Peter once again.
There you go, I told you.
But he's calling in again. So the latest conspiracy is they have cut off news media to where we're not getting reports, we're not getting science reports. They've cut us off from the World Health Organization. There's a desperate fear that something like bird flu will expand. Mm. And let's face it, there's a little bit of post-traumatic stress disorder going on, too.
I notice when you say all those things, like, my heart starts racing.
Take a deep breath.
And that is part of it. But noticing that we are at affect to all this information that's constantly coming in and just going to those simple acts, like taking a deep breath, having connections with people who we care about,
yeah,
and doing actions together.
That reminds me that trauma is only bad when you're in isolation. We can go through really hard things, and if we don't go through it alone, if we have people with us,
that we trust,
it mitigates the effects of trauma.
You know, I had a conversation with a friend of mine who's a psychotherapist who specializes in the LGBT transgender community. She says she's seeing a huge influx of business and a lot of people with anxiety. Are you seeing the same thing?
I'm seeing a lot of people who want to do something. And that's kind of what I'm speaking to right now is, like, sitting in front of a TV and watching news, scrolling social media, those are going to depress us. But getting into action, out with other people, is going to make a difference on the local level. And getting involved in our local politics leads up higher as well.
Getting out of that media silo.
Yeah.
Okay, I would like, as long as we're talking about your practice, I'd like to do what lawyers like to do sometimes and pose a hypothetical question, and I'll pose it to both of you. So you're sitting in your office, the phone rings, and you pick it up, and the voice...
Let me jump in for a moment. I'm going to try to get a call or two through, even though the phones have been dropping. It looks like Elise is on the line. Elise, welcome to Your Legal Rights. You're on the air.
Hello?
Hi.
This is Eliza.
Eliza, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Oh, yeah. I just, at the beginning of the show, you talked about supporting organizations that may be defunded or organizations that work to show that the president has criminal behavior or anyway. I just wondered if you had three organizations that you could mention. Of course, we know KLW is the fourth one.
No, we're the first one.
As I was waiting to get on the phone, I thought, well, let me think of what are the things that are important to me. So I just wrote down three things that were important to me that probably aren't important to our president. And so now I have to think of organizations that are connected to the arts or to feeding people or spirituality. Anyway, I just wondered what your guests thought of different organizations that we can support either by our actions or our monies.
I love what you just did right there is you thought of where your values are. And then you started going, okay, the arts, that's important to me. I can't tell you what's going to, I'm down in Santa Cruz, I can't tell you what your local art scene is doing, but you know who you like. How do you support them? And working with the homeless people. One thing I do is I shop at Costco, and by my Costco, there's a homeless center. I always buy a little extra food to give to some homeless people. That's just a little tiny thing, but it's just us staying with our community, doing little actions that compound. The more that we can do those actions, the richer we can get. The more that we get in fear, the poorer that we get.
I'll give you two. Number one, Planned Parenthood. They're out there fighting on the forefront for women's rights. Number two, Pets in Need. That's a great organization here in the Bay Area, and they spread more joy through adopting small animals, dogs, cats, what have you. And they are really in need now because they're taking on the animals that have come out of the Los Angeles fire.
Mm. Or more typically, most of the shelters here are taking the animals that were in the shelters down there so that the animals that are displaced can be reunited with their owners.
Absolutely.
I just feel like, you know, it is good to help homeless people and buy food for them, and I do that. And I'm wanting to connect more with a community because I know
doing little individual activities isn't as
Do you have time and energy?
Or satisfying.
Do you have time and energy to coordinate something? That's a big thing.
Time, yes. Energy, some days.
Okay.
Some days not.
Down in Santa Cruz, somebody created something called the Warming Center. They looked around for empty buildings that were accessible for them. They got them to donate them for a period of time where homeless people could sleep in them. So they, and then they got a bunch of people to give them blankets. And that was one person just saying, I want to do something for them. And it takes a lot, and you need to get a lot of support from your friends and family if you were to do something like that. But that's a big step, much bigger than what I'm thinking most people have the energy to do.
Even a small step, go to work for an animal rescue group.
Yes.
Volunteer one day a week, 2 days a week. Go and feed lost dogs or lost cats or cats that are living on the streets that don't want to be adopted, that you just put out food for. Develop a relationship, and spending a little time with animals and petting them is amazing what it does for your psyche.
Mm-hmm. Two benefits, kill two birds with one stone, as it were. Declutter your house and clean out all the socks, the underwear, the shoes, the old clothes, and take them to a homeless center. I mean, people are desperate for just the simplest things like warm clothes.
And but maybe not the left, the lost left socks that are hiding behind your dryer.
Yeah, that's where they hide. I always wondered where they went.
I know down in Santa Cruz we have
wonderful suggestions.
Food not bomb.
Peter,
thank you very much for all those suggestions.
All right, well, thanks for calling.
Elisa, thank you for joining us. And let me also bring in Lisa from San Francisco. You've been on hold for a while. We've been trying to get you back in on the line. Welcome.
Yeah, but my name is Ilsa, not Lisa.
I'm sorry, Ilsa. Welcome to your legal rights.
I just wanted to say Muttville. In San Francisco.
Mudville. What is Mudville?
Mudville.
What? Tell us about Mudville. What is Mudville?
They take in elderly dogs and cats.
Oh, Mudville. That's wonderful.
Mudville.
Not
got
mud.
It. All right.
Got it.
That's wonderful stuff.
That's a great suggestion.
That is a great suggestion. And for every... You know, when you get stressed out and you just can't make things work, you go home, you pet your dog, you pet your cat. It's amazing how much it brings you back to center and brings you back into the right here, right now.
Yeah. You know, even if you're not going out and being with a nonprofit, you can create community just, you know, at your yoga class or... You know, just being out with people and being really friendly and getting people to stop being so isolated, I think, is part of being a good citizen.
Yeah. Something that we did down in Santa Cruz is we had a dance. It's called Dance Circle, and it's just run by a group of people. And last year we gave $20,000 into our community because nobody keeps that money. We just circulate that money. It's all about we... have a space. It's a non-alcoholic space, so people can go there. And if people are sad, they can cry. If people are excited, they can express their joy. So they get to experience their full range. We get to raise money and circulate that in the community where it's needed. And it's money that can move very quickly. And that's a great strategy.
All right, one last question for both of you. I started this before. So you pick up the phone in your office, and on the other end you hear, "Hi, Lisa. Hi, Serena. I understand you're a great therapist. This is Donald. I need some help. I need some advice."
What do you need help with?
Well, you know, my wife won't even live in the same house with me, and my children, they're not even speaking to me. What can I do? What did I do wrong?
So I've worked with... estrangement before, and one of the things that's hard but very necessary is that you take ownership of things that you've done that have hurt your loved ones, that might have made them feel bad and move into the bedroom.
But everybody loves me, I think.
This is the hard part. You have to take ownership of things that you've done wrong.
That's going to be very hard.
That's what I thought.
All right. Serena, how would you handle this difficult patient?
This is somebody who I do something in my practice called screening, where I do not see people who I do not feel safe with. I would screen him, and he would not get into my office.
Maybe by Zoom.
No. He's not somebody who I would work with.
Okay.
Let me sneak in one last caller. We've got Jennifer from Richmond on the line. Jennifer, you're on the air. Welcome to Your Legal Rights. Jennifer, if you can hear me, you're on the air. Jennifer, if you're still there, one last chance. Jennifer, if you get the chance, please call us back. We would love to hear from you, but we're almost out of time. We can hear Jennifer coming and coming in and coming out, and it just isn't working. Let's move on. You know, I wanted to give everybody a chance for any final remarks that they have. And we talked about everybody having a couple of minutes, but one person I didn't ask is Peter. Peter, you're on the line. Mm-hmm. Would you like to sum up for a minute or so? Any last thoughts?
Yeah, listening carefully to what was said, and I do agree, acting locally, all news is local. But when facing such a monumental mountain of woe, yes, it's great to do your little part, and everyone should. But those organizations also need to become communications devices so that that good news is shared and spread and people see progress. Mm-hmm. Unless you're seeing progress, all of these individual acts, no matter how good they are, will feel frustrating and as if you're not having any effect. Mm. So I would say a lot of those organizations, which are largely passive or fundraisers, we don't hear about the accomplishments and the changes that they are making. I would think people would want to be part of a system, an organization with causing change. And I think that's critical. So I think these organizations have to revamp their approach because they are facing a red media, which does not play fair.
Mm-hmm. Let me jump for a moment off topic. We do have Jennifer back. I'm going to try to give her a moment, but we have but about a minute. Jennifer?
Okay, so I'll make it quick then. I just wanted to express my gratitude because this is the kind of thing I think those of us who are blue, as you were mentioning earlier, need to hear, which is we have each other, mm-hmm. and there are things that we can do. I loved hearing about the houses in Santa Cruz, warm houses. Wow, I wanted to cry. Tears of joy.
Warming centers.
Thank you. I think what we all crave for our sanity is the good news and what Peter was just saying about organizations that are doing good and are succeeding with good things and staying in community. And I'm just so grateful because I wasn't going to turn the news on and it happened to be on KALW. From my morning ride, and I was on my way home, and I'm just so grateful that I heard the show. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
We're glad that you joined us, Jennifer. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Let me give each of you a minute or two for any of your closing thoughts. Who wants to start?
Okay. So my closing thoughts are starting with our most inner sphere. That's our bodies, making sure that we are in good health. Because this is a marathon, not a sprint. So you've got to take your rest. You've got to do all those things, like up your game, take your vitamins, all of that. And then making sure your family, spreading out from that. If you have kids in school, making sure that you're engaged with their activities, making sure you're socially connected. And then from there, what else can you do? Just slowly widen, but take care of yourself. Pace yourself and then go for it and support others.
Yeah, I definitely agree that it is a marathon instead of a sprint. You know, having some expertise both personally and professionally with narcissists, leaving high conflict situations, you do have to really take care of yourself, but you also really have to be engaged in the community. I think that would be my final thought is get your friend, you know, be out with your friends, make sure you have a lot of community support. And if you're starting to get depressed, that'll keep you from getting out there. So, you know, treat it, find a therapist or somebody who can really help you work through it so that you don't stay isolated. I think isolation is what they need in order to get away with all this awful stuff.
Dean, you want to take about a minute?
Yeah, I'd like to, because, you know, in preparing for this show, I was drawn back to one of my favorite books. There's a book that was written in 1960 by an Italian author named Elias Canetti called Crowds and Power. And Canetti talks about the various styles of leadership. And one style of leadership that he talks about is the charismatic leader, or he calls him the commander. And it fits Donald Trump to a T. And Canetti said about the commander, and I quote, "Whether or not he's actually in danger from enemies, the commander always feels himself menaced. The anxiety of command increases in him until it results in catastrophe. But before catastrophe overtakes him, it will have engulfed innumerable others." That's Donald Trump. Ladies and gentlemen, do not let Donald Trump silence you. Do not let him make you bow down to his lies. Get involved. Get out there. Join those community groups. Connect with your neighbors and your friends. And most of all, join us, because we're going to be giving you over the next few weeks what could be a survival manual for this new reality. And I hope you will join us each and every week. And I thank you for joining us tonight.
You've been listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM, San Francisco Bay Area. Tonight we've looked for a little closure on the election. We've talked about the changes in the political climate and surviving in the current climate for many people that maybe have a different political persuasion than those in power, and things you can do for your own sanity and survival. Our guests tonight have been Santa Cruz social psychotherapist Lisa Herndon and massage therapist author Serena Fennell. And next week, please join us again on Your Legal Rights, where we'll discuss the current legal and political environment for transgender and non-binary individuals. And as always, we'll take your calls and answer your questions right here, Your Legal Rights, at our usual time, Wednesday night at 6 o'clock. Once again, thank you to all of our guests. To tonight's co-host, Emmy-nominated legal and political analyst Dean Johnson. And at the controls, Joanne Marr. Our thanks to all of you for joining us. I'm Jeff Hayden. Good night, and zealously guard your legal rights.
Support for KALW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you live in San Francisco or Marin County, the Bar Association's lawyer referral service can arrange for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. Call 415-989-1616 or visit sfbar.org for more information.